Hey guys, so today's show, we recorded it, and it's a really fun one. John Hamm, who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder, hopped on with me to talk about today's trade. Right when we finished recording, the news dropped that Anthony Davis is expected to decline his option. Nothing really worth re-recording the show over. This is something that we all saw coming. I'm sure the Lakers are probably getting ready for a lot of their guys to opt out. So that's what happens after you win a championship. You win a championship, you cash out, and you cash in. So that's where the Lakers are at. We'll see, you know, what kind of contract AD is looking to sign. We'll see what kind of situations Pelinka is envisioning. There was also the report that Wesley Matthews is on the Lakers' radar. He would essentially just replace Danny Green. So if the Lakers can add Wesley Matthews after trading away Danny Green and really upgrade with Dennis Schroeder, then so far the offseason is off to a great start. So without further ado, though, I'm going to go ahead and throw to the introduction of your typical show that you're used to. Again, really fun conversation here with John. You're really going to enjoy it. And then a fun episode planned for you guys tomorrow with a guest that I'm sure you guys have all heard before. He's great to talk to this time of year because of his understanding of the CBA. And that's about as far as I'm going to get in terms of not wanting to jinx who the guest is going to be. All right. Have a good one. Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Pete Zayas. I'm not even joined by you guys. Usually I would be answering your questions on this Sunday evening for the Monday mailbag episode, but the Lakers had different ideas in mind. Harrison announced to the world that he was going to go on vacation, and Michael Jordan meme, the league took that personally, and the Lakers decided to ship Danny Green and likely their 28th pick to Oklahoma City for Dennis Schroeder, who and in order to talk about that entire move, I'm joined by John Hamm, not of Mad Men. I like to make that joke every time, but I'm you know, but he's
it never gets old.
I'm sure it doesn't. I'm sure it's just the line is probably always like, not that John Hamm. Yep. But no,
I lean into it. I just lean all the way into it now.
If I was talking to the other John Hamm, I would say not the John Hamm of the OKC Dream Team pod and 107.7 the franchise. But John, how are you holding up? Like, we were having a nice quiet Sunday and then not so much.
Well, I mean, for me, look, the teardown of the Thunder is something that if anyone's been paying attention, you know, since July 2019, like, this has been coming, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's like we've been sitting around, those of us that talk about the Thunder, write about the Thunder, it's like we're just sitting around like, when is the transaction window going to open? Because that is when stuff is going to start happening. And sure enough, we're seeing stuff start to happen. So we're not terribly surprised around here.
I think I saw Woj tweet today that OKC has something like 16 picks over the next like 5 years or something insane, right?
So yeah, right. It's their strategy.
Danny Ainge is rolling in his grave at how jealous he is at that war chest.
Yeah, it's like I say, it's sort of how a small market is going to have to operate, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Anthony, you know as well as I do, anyone that is a fan of the Lakers understands the value of a franchise player, the one percenter. Yeah. When it comes to NBA players, that guy typically means really good things for your team. And Oklahoma City was fortunate enough to have three of those guys at one point, two of those for a significant amount of time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's sort of understood, like, in Oklahoma City, to get one of those guys, it's going to be through the draft. That's just the way it's going to be. And so they are trying to maximize the chances they have to hopefully get at least one. Two would be great. It'd be nice if they had one on hand already too. Mm-hmm. They want to get back to being, you know, in the Western Conference Finals and beyond again. that's where they want to get to. And just, you know, being a mediocre, scrappy, oh, this team plays the right way sort of team, just that's not going to get them very far.
Yeah, I've always kind of been curious about this with OKC and the fans. And we'll talk about Schroeder here in a bit and what Lakers mm-hmm. fans can expect of him. But the OKC fans have been, for lack of a better term, pretty spoiled, right? Since yeah. the team showed up.
Hashtag blessed.
Yes, they haven't had to deal with a full-fledged rebuild ever in their yeah. time as NBA fans. And I'm kind of curious, like, how you think the city, the fan base is going to handle that. Do you think it's something that they'll stick around for, or do you think they'll get kind of feisty with how long that rebuild might take?
I honestly think they're still going to show up and they'll be mad that they're losing. I mean, I mm-hmm. honestly feel like that's the thing. Thunder basketball, I believe, is firmly entrenched here in Oklahoma City. And so, but yeah, no, there are some people that, you know, some of them probably don't even remember the first season in OKC, you know, where they were a 23 win team because they just skyrocketed after that.
Right.
Now on the plus side, if there is a plus side to a, you know, pandemic, you know, how many people are going to be able to go to games and watch a team that is rebuilding, right? Maybe right. that sort of lines up. So yeah, I mean, some people, and I'll give the front office this, like Sam Presti wrote an op-ed for the Oklahoman last mm-hmm. year, last July, and like tried to tell people like this, without coming out and saying, we're going to accumulate a bunch of draft picks, we're probably going to be really bad, but we hope to be great one day. You know, he tried to get people aware of that. And that is stuff that a lot of us that do our own podcast, talk about it, have been talking about for a while. So anyone that doesn't quite grasp it, you know, again, this Oklahoma City cannot and will not operate like Miami, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York. I mean, mm-hmm. they're just not going to draw those guys. And, you know, slowly but surely, I think some of them get it, but, you know, it might be painful for some of them to actually go through it.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that's, you know, get it before the Lakers, you know, tried their attempt at a youth generated rebuild. Heading into it, you're like, hey, you know, this could be kind of fun. And then by the end of the year, I'm sure a lot of Lakers fans were like, oh my God, this is awful. Good Lord.
Right.
Yeah. And then we went through six more years of it.
Right. But you just never know. You just yeah. never know, you know, and honestly, OKC is sort of playing the odds here. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, they would even tell you, yeah, I mean, if they were operating one of the LA teams, they would operate completely differently, but yeah. you know, they're going to make their mistakes. Look at what Philly did through the process. They hit a couple of times, they whiffed a several other times, but they had a lot of bites of the apple.
They need to bring in Sam Hinkie is what I kind of get.
Hey, I'm down for it personally. It sounds yeah. like Sam Hinkie's done with the NBA though.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't blame him. I mean, he was literally right. forced out of his job by the league office. That wasn't ideal.
Yeah. Not ideal at all.
Last thing before we throw to break here. And I think this is going to offer up a pretty good segue to the other side of it. I think this is one of those rare deals where both teams say, mission accomplished. I think both teams yeah. are walking away from this deal really happy about what they brought in.
Absolutely. So, and here's how I phrased it on one of my pods earlier. If you read the Twitter reaction from the OKC side, they felt like they should have got a top 10 pick for Dennis Schroeder. Mm-hmm. A lot of smart NBA said they're lucky that the Thunder are lucky they got anything out of mm-hmm. this trade, right? So if you go in the middle, then mm-hmm. you wind up with a late first round pick, Danny Green, who may net another late first round pick, possibly yeah. a couple of seconds, who knows. That's a good return for Dennis Schroeder. And that has nothing to do with, you know, like Schroeder being a bad player at all. I just think the circumstances sort of align that way. And no, I think the Lakers have to be really happy coming away with this. And OKC is getting what they want out of it too.
Yeah. So generally speaking, if I go to the trade machine and I put together a trade and I post it on Twitter and I'm getting yelled at by both fan bases, generally, I think I make a pretty good trade there, right? Because,
right, exactly.
because these trades, like nobody ever walks away from it, you know, and says, man, that sure was an easy deal. You know, right. that almost never happens, you know, and I think with this one, the Lakers needed a secondary ball handler, now a primary. Schroeder's good enough to be a primary ball handler. And they land him. He has a decent enough, a short enough contract to where their free agency plans aren't completely obliterated next year and moving forward. And apparently, as per a few reporters over the course of the day, the Lakers felt like they aren't going to be able to keep Rajon Rondo, or they're going to be priced out of Rajon Rondo, which is insane to me. I can't believe that's a sentence that we're actually saying in 2020, right. but here we are.
Like, is Vlade Divac still running a team somewhere? Like, that's my first, like, is Vlade sitting around? Like, give him 9 million, give him at least 9, you know? It does seem wild, but no, I mean, I think it, just from what I watch, and obviously you've got a much better angle on the Lakers than I do. I'm sort of looking at this from a distance, but you know, Danny Green is a obviously valuable NBA player. Yes, he's aging a little bit, but the Lakers sort of got the best version of KCP throughout the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm also thinking of this, I don't know if this is part of it, but if Talen Horton-Tucker is a guy that they can lean on next season to step up and take on more of a role, that's a good thing too. And then you mentioned having another ball handler. You know, Schroeder thrived last season, obviously, next to Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's not a guy that's going to dominate the basketball. I think it is going to be a really good fit for what the Lakers need going into, you know, next season after having about 4 total days off since the finals.
Yeah. Sure feels that way. I'm excited. I know the other day I was putting together, I was getting ready to record, this show and then the other show, I started thinking about draft and I was being asked draft questions in the iTunes reviews. And I'm like, wait, what? We're here.
I know.
It's when? What is going on? Right. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to keep talking about the trade itself, where both teams feel about it. I want to talk about Dennis Schroeder, the player, and some of the reasons why I think the Lakers made made Green available the way that they did, and plenty more. So hang tight. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Head on over to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and save $10 off your first order, your second order, your third order, and however many orders you or your friends that you tell about this great product get to benefit from. They have great flavors, everything from caramel brownie. My personal favorite name is Cherry Barcia. The cookies and cream one is fantastic. And then they have the regular, salted caramel is my original favorite flavor. And it's great no matter what you might be looking for. Are you looking to supplement a meal while you're trying to cut weight? Are you looking to have a little bit of extra protein to add to a meal if you're trying to gain weight? Are you trying to maintain weight by, just having a nice healthy snack? It's going to be great for you. It's going to have you covered. So head on over again to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON and save $10 off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. All right, so we finished kind of talking about the scene in OKC and why so many people kind of saw this coming. I just recorded on Friday. I recorded a show where the names tied to the Lakers were Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, Victor Oladipo, and DeMar DeRozan. And I thought of those names there, I thought Schroeder actually made the most sense because I didn't think it would take as much to land him as it might those other guys. Not just because Chris Paul is a better player, or not just because DeMar DeRozan is a more talented player, but because they make so much money that you have to match those salaries, and you literally have to send out more guys to get him. Schroeder, I thought, there's some concern about his shooting and whether or not last year was an outlier. There's some concern as far as, whether his play off the ball with Chris Paul, like if he's actually going to be happy doing that now again, right? Most point guards of his talent level want the ball as often as possible. He's not going to have it as much with LeBron. But from where you were sitting and watching Schroeder last year, first question is like the shooting percentage jumped, you know, like 7-8% for him, for, you know, over the course of his career and then to last year. And, you know, just straight up, do you think that's a for real thing? Do you think that's sustainable, or do you think we'll look back on that year and say, like, remember that 1 year Schroeder shot like 38% from 3-point range?
It does feel like a bit of an outlier. Now, I mean, you know, next year could be 36%, right, instead of 38 or whatever, right? I mean, I don't think he's a bad shooter at all. He became a much better catch and shoot guy, which I think LeBron is pretty good at setting up those opportunities. So that's probably gonna benefit him a little bit there. I think you do have to be a little bit concerned about, you know, it was last year a bit of a career year for him. I understand why, you know, maybe some of the analytics guys are kind of down on him. But I mean, from my perch, from my standpoint, never saw Dennis Schroeder, you know, throw a fit because he wasn't starting. He understood coming to OKC, he was going to be behind Russell Westbrook. He understood he was going to be behind Chris Paul. But I think also was sort of like, yeah, if I get the sixth man of the year, that's fine, but that's not really one of what I'll be known for. I think this guy wants to be a starter in the NBA again, and not necessarily just because, you know, for personal selfish reasons. I think he just sort of sees himself as that type of a player in the NBA. He's fiercely competitive. He wants to win. And it's not the sort of thing that like drives him over the edge, Russell Westbrook style, to where it just becomes like this uncontrollable sort of, you know, this mess in trying to win. He's a very competitive guy. And you know, I think he's also one that speaks pretty plainly. I mean, he's been one of the few guys I thought from the Thunder that would get up and say things like what is going on, you know, with the team. So, you know, there's a lot of reason to be concerned about whether last season can be replicated in some degree. I honestly think I just think he's going to be a terrific fit with the Lakers. And even if last year was a bit of an outlier, I think he's still going to produce well enough that he's going to fit right in.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think I understand why people are concerned just because there was such a drastic jump in 3-point shooting. But you look at the kind of shots that he's going to get, like Rajon Rondo, for example, was shooting something like 40% in the playoffs, 40% from 3-point range on wide open looks, right? And he got so many wide open looks because defenses said, all right, we know what's going to happen if we don't show extra coverage over to LeBron. And we know what's going to happen if we don't show extra coverage over to Anthony Davis. We have to give up something. We don't want to try to, we'll talk about Danny Green here in a bit, but generally speaking, you don't want to give up open looks to Danny Green. Over the course of the postseason, you didn't want to give up open looks to KCP. And if the fifth guy on the court was Rajon Rondo, you have to give up something. And he found himself wide open a lot. And I kind of feel like with Schroeder, I don't see why that wouldn't continue. You know, if he's the fifth guy on the court and the ball rotates over to him, I don't see why all of a sudden, you know, they'll prioritize guarding him more than the other couple guys on the court, whether it's not, maybe not necessarily Anthony Davis and LeBron James, but you know, maybe will they close out harder or not want to step further away from Schroeder than they would KCP or Kuzma if he's still around. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I can't imagine he's going to come to LA and stop getting open looks. I just don't see that scenario.
No, and like the lineup that was most effective, it was talked about so much, was the 3-point guard lineup with OKC, Chris Paul, Schroeder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, often with Danilo Gallinari and Steven Adams. And it's very similar. Now, you know, Adams is obviously not a threat to shoot from the outside, but you know, when teams were playing the Thunder, it was a similar pick your poison, right? We can't leave Gallinari alone. Chris Paul is going to burn us in the mid range. Shai is obviously capable of, he's a developing offensive player. And so a lot of times that would open up stuff for Schroeder. And to his credit, you know, he did hit those open shots at a, you know, at a high degree and a high percentage. So that's why I'm optimistic that maybe some of that can continue, because, you know, like I say, LeBron James and just having that kind of gravity with him and AD is going to open up just a lot of things.
Yeah. Now from OKC's perspective with Green, do you see any scenario where he finishes the year with OKC, or do you think it's either they're going to move him by a trade or they're going to buy him out?
I would be surprised if he finishes the season. I think there's honestly a few paths here. One, I do think that they could move him again, because I think just that type of a player is going to be in demand for a lot of teams in the league, especially those at the top. And if OKC, look, it doesn't have to be a 2020 first round pick. It might be. But if they get a late 2021 first round pick or 2022, I think they're happy with that too. You know, I honestly think that's the sort of thing where they will eventually move on from him. He could, I think he could start the season in OKC. He's not the sort of veteran that's going to rock the boat.
No.
He strikes me as that type of guy the Thunder like to bring in to be like the solid professional to show other guys, like, this is how you make it in the league. This is what it takes to do it year in, year out. Here's my story. Here's how I've won 3 rings, et cetera, et cetera. But at some point, I feel like if it's not like at the draft or right when free agency starts, certainly by the trade deadline, someone is going to want to, cough up and trade for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree. Green has been too valuable over too many postseasons for nobody to look at him and say he can't help. I just can't see that.
Milwaukee is a team that came to mind automatically.
Uh-huh.
And they've got, you throw together George Hill, you throw together DJ Wilson in a first round pick.
They're trying to do whatever they can to get rid of Eric Bledsoe, apparently, which is,
I know. Yeah.
Fun to watch.
And it sounds like OKC is not terribly interested in long-term money. So,
yeah.
And I think that might've been another thing too, Anthony, that sort of made this trade maybe a little more palatable for OKC, is they weren't taking back a lot of long-term money. Green is on a shorter deal and they can flip him again for another expiring contract and assets. That might've played a part too.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we'll wrap up with a few more thoughts on this trade. Where both teams go from here. I know the Lakers have their work cut out for him replacing Green because he was pretty valuable. But I have a theory as to why they were okay with moving on. You know, it was interesting over the course of the Miami series at the end of the last year, where Miami very clearly didn't have an answer for Anthony Davis. Nobody has an answer for LeBron James. And eventually, you really have to just do something drastic to try to contend when the talent gap is where it was, also because of injuries, right? And one of the things that, as that series was kind of winding down, that I was actually kind of nervous about was, what if they just stopped leaving or caring about Green? Because he was struggling to hit shots. And it was very clearly kind of in his head that he was missing a ton and by his standards. And as soon as I saw that was the case, because we started to see Miami wander a little further away from Green than you tend to normally, as soon as I saw that, I said, oh, this might be a real hit to his value moving forward. And I think, for the Lakers where they're sitting, I think they might have some insight as to his injuries. I know he said over the course of the bubble, he never really felt 100%, which was pretty obvious, not just in terms of his offensive production, but his ability to move laterally really dipped. And then from the stuff that I was talking a second ago about, where Miami was a little more okay with moving off of him, like, that's why, even despite his struggles from in shooting, the Lakers and he was still productive from just a raw net rating standpoint, that when he was on the court, the Lakers tended to be pretty good. And it's just because he offered up a bunch of gravity, because no team is going to leave Danny Green wide open. And then they kind of started leaving him more and more open. And I kind of wonder if the Lakers saw that and said, well, that's where a lot of his value comes from. Yes, we're going to miss him as a help defender. And maybe that was to just a temporary dip in his shooting. But if that continued, his value as an NBA player really, kind of falls through the floor. Are do you think OKC is concerned about that at all, or do they think that he'll be able to bounce back and become an asset all over again?
I mean, that certainly could be a possibility. I mean, we mentioned his age earlier, right? This guy's not getting any younger. He's got quite a few miles on him, and you know,
playoff miles.
Exactly. So it still feels like someone. I mean, like, you know, even Kyle Korver like gets picked up, right? Because the guy can shoot, and you know that he's a good presence in the locker room and all that stuff. You know, it feels like that someone else is still going to pick him up, unless he just if the bottom falls out, then so be it. Then he does become a buyout candidate, and OKC, you know, just sort of moves on with their business. But I sort of mentioned, like, again, I think it helps that he's a professional, mm-hmm. that he's the sort of guy that can mentor young guys, at least temporarily. It's a role that worked out well for Chris Paul last season. And yeah, then if the shooting is just not there, if the performance isn't there, you know, you go your separate way. But I think OKC probably has a better chance on cashing him in for something else, rather than if the Lakers had cobbled together two or three guys,
right,
and try to make a package.
Yeah, it's a gamble that it's a worthy gamble. Like, it's the kind of thing that you know, you go there to the blackjack table and you get two face cards, and you know, you could the dealer shows a three, you could split, I guess. And you could try to get really clever. You're going to piss off everybody around you, and then, you know, you might just wind up busting two times over. I think here the steady play is just to stay and allow the dealer to bust or not beat your 20. And I think here with Green, you stay and you see what you can get from this guy, either on the court yourself or off the court as from a leadership standpoint. Because, you know, one thing that I really think Green offers value to players around him is he was a higher draft pick, and he did see his career kind of flash before his eyes. But, you know, he focused on the things that make you a winning basketball player and became one of the most valuable role players that we've seen over the last few years. And I think for any young team, you know, with any collection of young players, that's really, really valuable. I think that's part of why OKC was so on board with this trade.
And look, the San Antonio connection doesn't hurt, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's another part of it too. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned that. I mean, this is the sort of story for this type of a player that I think resonates with Oklahoma City. Second round mm-hmm. pick who, you know, didn't make it on his first try, had to work his way back up through the G League, you know, had to prove himself. Cashed in the opportunity when it came along. And yeah, I mean, again, I think that's the sort of story that resonates here. So that doesn't hurt at all. And, you know, when he's the last two stops he's been at, he's won rings, and that helps too.
So where do you think we'll finish on this? Where do you think OKC goes from here? Do you think they're going to be successful in moving Chris Paul? Do you think even Steven Adams gets moved? Like, how do you think this all plays out? Do you think it's just a full fire sale, or do they try to be as productive as they can be and maintain some value as best they can?
I mean, yeah, a fire sale or just tear down to the studs, however you want to look at it. I think that's the far more likely option. You know, you talked about Chris Paul as an option for the Lakers, and the issue there was, how do you cobble together enough salary to make that work? Well, it's easier to do with Phoenix, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of the indications have been. I think even though, yes, it is still a big 2-year commitment to Chris Paul, I still feel like some team is going to step up. If it's not if it's not Phoenix, it's Philly, it's New York. And so I you know, something is going to come together there. I'm pretty confident on that. Plus, at this point, you know, if Chris Paul's looking and saying, like, okay, Dennis is gone, Gallinari's probably going to be gone, why would I be going back to OKC for? You know, maybe I need to, you know, maybe it is time to move on. So
do you think he tried to pack himself in Schroeder's bags? Like, do you think that crosses his mind?
maybe they got along really well last season. Well, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but
it's like that commercial, right, where somebody's pretending to be Chris Paul. He's going to show up to the Lakers facility with some blonde in his in like the front part. Yeah. Of his, I swear I'm Dennis Schroeder. What are you talking about? Yeah,
exactly. Oh, man. So, but yeah, you know, and then, you know, Danilo Gallinari is an unrestricted free agent, but, you know, the Thunder could very well sign and trade him and get a little something. I don't know that they're going to get some massive return, you know, for Gallinari, but, you know, they could get something in return there. Yeah, that's a $27 million salary for, you know, he's valuable, does a lot of valuable things. He's not Rudy Gobert, let's just be perfectly honest. So
yeah,
he's been a guy that I've sort of wondered, like, is he going to be the Nick Collison for the next generation of Thunder? Do they keep him around at a lower salary, you know, and have him sort of pass on, you know, the Thunder way, so to speak? Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, I fully believe this team is, you know, I know tanking is a bad word out there for some people. You know, it becomes something that gets used in a, you know, message board or a social media battle, you know, oh, your team is tanking, they're awful. But, you know, again, I think this is sort of how OKC is going to have to get back, going to have a chance to get back to somewhere close to where they were. They're going to have to rebuild it from the ground up. And that's what I fully expect from them.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you have to trust Presti. Like, he's been so good to this point that, you know, if you're a fan of any team out there and they're embarking on a rebuild, there are very few hands that you would feel less confident in or more confident in than Sam Presti's. So, you know,
yeah.
I believe that he'll figure it out. The Adams thing is kind of interesting. I like the idea of Collins, because like we see it with Miami, for example, with Udonis Haslam. Like, we saw the value of chemistry and culture and all of those things to the nth degree in the bubble, where you saw teams like Miami overachieve. You saw a team like the Clippers vastly underachieve, right? And it's I think a big part of that was the lack of culture and the lack of leadership with the Clippers and the immense leadership with Miami between Haslam and Jimmy Butler. And I think, you know, I think one of the things that some of the, you know, the Hinkies of the world and the Maurys of the world tend to overlook is the human impact, the very important human element that plays a role in the development of some of these young guys. And somebody like Steven Adams has really understood what it takes to be successful in OKC for a long time. I think he's really well suited to that role. I'd like to see him win a championship personally, because I just really enjoy Steven Adams. I think he's hilarious. Yeah. But if that's the way that he goes, then he's well suited for that too.
There's absolutely no one in the media that wants Steven Adams gone, because he is the best quote.
He's hilarious.
He is just so great. And obviously he sort of resonates with the fan base. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, he's a guy that is, he is so unselfish that it gets frustrating sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, there's, you know, you feel like, dude, you've got something going here. You can do a little more. You can, you know, you need to demand it a little more. That's just not in his DNA though. He is the ultimate unselfish guy, and that's valuable. It really is. And it might be more valuable to OKC than elsewhere. And that's one that I'm keeping an eye on. I just think with that big salary, I know it's a 1-year commitment, but I just don't know where he would land. I think Atlanta was a possibility last year. I really think that could have happened, but then they pivoted and went to Clint Capella, a lower salaried big man that could do a lot of the same stuff, basically. And that's where I just think it might be difficult to move him, and that might just sort of move him into that role, whether he wants it or not.
Yeah, that happens too.
Yeah.
yeah. Before we get out of here, do you want to plug all of your stuff? The OKC Dream Team Pod. You work with the 107.7, the franchise. Anything special you guys have going on over there heading into the draft in one of the most insane off seasons in recent history?
Oh man, you know, this with the radio station has been so crazy, because I mean, obviously it's the flagship station of OU football, right? Mm-hmm. So that is first and foremost what matters most. So everyone, and also this is heading into OU OSU Bedlam on Saturday. So a little preoccupied at the moment, but we are gathering our you know, gathering our thoughts together on how we're going to get in and cover next season. Yeah, I will likely be on a lot of pregame shows. That's been kind of the role that I've slid into. You know, I also serve as a quote unquote insider where I, you know, have radio hits throughout the week. So yeah, there's that going on. The OKC Dream Team is a podcast on Patreon. It's a podcast with me, Brett Dawson, who covered the Lakers for a moment, also covered the Thunder. Andrew Schlecht from Down to Dunk, also from The Athletic, and special appearances from Royce Young of ESPN. And so, yeah, that's basically my two little NBA worlds that I hover in for the most part.
Well, I think you do a fantastic job. Thank you very much for hopping on. This is always fun. And anytime you want to hop on here and if Schroeder goes through a slump, just laugh at me because he regressed to the mean, you know, let her rip.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And next time we'll just have to get together and talk about Miles Morales on PS5 or something like that.
So. Oh, man, if I ever get one.
Oh, should I not brag about having that next?
Oh, you have one? All right. Well, that's it. We got to go.
The planets aligned for me. Like within 5 minutes on BestBuy.com, I had one in my cart and purchased and ready to pick up the next day. So this never happens to me. So I don't know what I've done to deserve this.
I don't know what to do with my hands. All right. Well, thank you very much, John. I really appreciate you hopping on. Best Thanks of luck to you me. This year and moving forward in that rebuild. Pete and I will be back tomorrow to discuss more of the trade as best that he can. He being a Laker employee, I'm not sure how he's going to talk about Dennis Schroeder. I take that back. Eric Pincus is going to be on tomorrow. So look forward to that. And then Pete will be back on, hopefully, for the Wednesday-Thursday show where he can actually start talking about some of these guys. We'll handle this best we can, though. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Talk to you tomorrow.